Brett wandered slowly through the massive building of the cathedral, deliberately taking his time. Finn might be his boss, but he didn't own Brett Random. Well, actually, maybe he did at that, but Brett still had a little pride left that showed up now and again in small acts of rebellion, as long as Finn wasn't around to see them. Like pissing in the coffee maker the last time he'd been left alone in Finn's kitchen. After a while, Brett looked around him and found he'd ended up in the great central hall of the cathedral. He stopped dead in his tracks, impressed almost in spite of himself. The towering walls were all veined marble, soaring up to a staggeringly high ceiling, covered with magnificent works of art that dated from before Lionstone's time. The huge stained glass windows were more recent and traditional, showing the Stations of the Cross, populated with stylized depictions of Owen Deathstalker and his companions. Rows and rows of dark wooden pews stretched away before him, heading for the main altar of sculptured steel and glass, practically a work of art in its own right. Brett wandered slowly down the aisle, then drifted over to one of the pews and sat down. He enjoyed the faint traces of incense on the still air, left over from a previous service. No one else was around, and it was all very quiet and very calm. For the first time in a long time, Brett felt almost at peace. He supposed this was what home felt like, to people who knew what a home was. His stomach quieted and his shoulders relaxed. He felt safe here. Even Finn Bloody Durandal wouldn't dare raise his voice in a place as calm and serene as this. Sanctity and serenity all but oozed from the pale marble walls. It was like being deep underwater, far from the storms that troubled the surface. Brett looked around him, surprised at how deeply the cathedral's great hall affected him. People had been coming here to worship for centuries and had left something of their peace and grace behind them. There was comfort here, and the hope of better things to come. Brett had never been particularly religious. In the con games he'd run for so long, belief was for suckers. But just lately, he'd been thinking bigger thoughts. Nothing like working for a genuinely evil man to make you consider questions of morality. Brett had never really thought of himself as a bad man. Until now. You couldn't ally yourself with something like the Spider Harps and not fear for the state of your soul. Brett had been thinking about the mind and the soul, and the oversoul. He was an Esper now, for better or worse, and that changed everything. He'd been feeling the presence of the oversoul more and more, like a great and glorious light shining in the depths of a dark, dark night. When he looked in that direction, which he could sense but not name, he felt awe and wonder, and something that was very like a religious experience. He also felt shit scared. It was just too big, too intense, too overwhelming. He couldn't cope with it. And when faced with something that scared and threatened him, Brett did what he always did. He ran away.
That doesn't always work, Brett.
Brett looked around sharply, almost jumping out of his skin, and found a statuesque brunette sitting right next to him. There was no way she could have sneaked up on him and sat down so close she was practically on his lap without him realizing. Not with a practiced paranoid like him. But there she was, large as life and twice as overpowering, decked out in black silks and darker makeup, smiling at him like she could see right to the bottom of his lousy, rotten soul. Brett felt very like whimpering, or fainting. He didn't run, but only because he just knew that wherever he ran, she'd already be there waiting for him.
The Oversoul, I presume?
Of course. We've been calling you for some time, but you wouldn't pick up the phone, so to speak. So we decided a personal visit was in order. I had business in the city today, so it fell to me. Relax, I'm not going to force any literature on you. I'm Crow Jane. I'm here to make you an offer you won't want to refuse.
That's usually my line. Never con a con man, I know all the lines. First rule of the game, any offer that seems too good to be true probably is too good to be true. You don't want me. I'm not really an Esper. Finn force-fed me to Jesper Draga, and now I'm just really a minor league telepath. Accent on the minor. Throw me back, Crow Jane. I'm too small a fish for you to bother with.
All are welcome in the Oversoul. There's a place and a role for everyone. That's the point. It's not a union or an organization. It's family. It's home.
I've managed quite successfully without either all my life. I look out for myself. Always have done.
It sounds very lonely.
Crow Jane put a hand over his.
You don't have to be alone anymore, Brett. Join with us, and you'll never be alone again.
God, sounds awful. I'd hate it. I'm not the joining type. I don't play well with others, never have. And I won't give up being me.
Why settle for anything so small and limited? You could be you and us as well.
Sounds crowded.
If I joined the Oversoul, I'd have to give up all my secrets, wouldn't I?
We don't hide anything from each other. We don't need to.
There you are. Told you we had nothing in common. Look, I really wouldn't fit in. Trust me on this. I'm a rogue, not made to run with the pack. And I like it that way. I like knowing things that no one else knows, and always being one step ahead. You can't make me join you against my will, can you?
No. And we wouldn't if we could. That's the point. You'll find it very lonely, Brett, trying to live among humans when you're not human any longer. There's a closeness Espers know that no one else could hope to understand. Don't you ever feel a need for love or companionship, for tenderness and acceptance?
Wouldn't know what to do with him if I had him. Well, don't let me keep you. I'm sure you have much more useful business you could be about.
Crow Jane patted his hand once, sadly, and then rose to her feet.
Watch out for the elves, Brett. They'd eat you alive. You've seen the spider harps. Trust me, that's only the tip of the iceberg where the elves are concerned. They live to hate and kill. That's all they have, and that's all they are.
I could, give you the location of the spider harps.
We know where they are. We've always known.
Brett gaped at her.
Then why don't you do something about them?
What punishment could we offer that could be worse than the hell they've made for themselves?
But they're killing people. Killing and eating them.
What do you care? I thought you were a rogue who walked alone.
Brett met her gaze steadily.
I'm a rogue, not a monster. I know the difference between crime and sin. I know evil when I see it. I'd kill them in a moment if I thought I could get away with it.
And we would kill them in a moment, if we thought we could. But the Mater Mundi made them too well. Even the Oversoul has its limitations. Their time will come. Stay away from the elves, Brett. They're all monsters inside.
What part of rogue didn't you understand? I'm not interested in joining anyone's party.
It's a bad time to be standing alone, Brett.
Tell me about it.
And then she was gone. Brett leaned back in his pew and wiped sweat from his forehead with the back of his hand. The Oversoul was possibly the only thing that frightened him more than Finn Durandal. And Finn, at least, was content to let Brett be himself, even if Brett wasn't sure he liked that person very much anymore. He decided he'd think about that later. Right now, he had his orders. Find Rose Bloody Constantine. He'd already tried her chamber under the arena, and she wasn't there. And if she wasn't there, she could be anywhere. He was a bit lost as to where to start looking first. It wasn't as if she had any friends to go to, or even any outside interests. He could start by monitoring the Peacekeeper comm channels, listen out for reports of mass carnage or excessive property destruction. Rose wasn't the kind to hide her appalling light under a bushel for long. Brett got to his feet. He looked wistfully around him, savoring the peace and calm, and then he turned and walked steadily away from it. Louis Deathstalker stood outside the door to Anne Barclay's office, trying to work up the courage to announce himself. He wasn't comfortable being back in the house that had pretty much disowned him, but he didn't know where else to go. And now that he was here, he still didn't know what to do. He looked at the implacably closed door before him, and it scared him. Anne was his oldest friend. He'd always been able to turn to her for advice and help and comfort, but he wasn't sure he was welcome here anymore. So much had changed between them in so short a time, almost against his will. They had both become different people.
I know. I can smell her on you.
Louis looked up at the surveillance camera, set just above the doorframe. The little red light was on, so he knew it was watching him. Knew she was watching him.
I need to talk to you, Anne. There are decisions I have to make. I can't do it on my own. Can I come in?
There was no response. He tried the door handle, but it wouldn't budge. She'd locked him out, turned her back on him.
Anne, please, we have to talk. This is important. I don't know what to do. You spent most of your life telling me what I should be doing. Don't let me down now.
He tried a smile, right into the camera lens, but it didn't feel very successful.
Anne!
But there was only the locked door and the watching eye of the camera. People passing by in the narrow corridor looked at him oddly. He ignored them. A slow, hot anger began to build in his heart. He hit the door with his fist and kicked it, and the door shuddered in its frame, but still it didn't open. So, Louis drew his disruptor. The energy beam vaporized the lock and blew the whole door inwards, tearing the door right off its hinges. Even at its lowest setting, the energy beam had still plunged on across the office to blow up one of the security monitors on the far wall. It had burst into flames, and thick black smoke billowed across Anne's office. Louis walked slowly forward into Anne's office, through the gap where the door had been. He kicked the buckle door to one side and advanced steadily on Anne, who was spraying the burning monitor with chemical foam. The fire reluctantly subsided under half a ton of chemical foam, though smoke still drifted heavily on the air. Anne lowered the fire extinguisher, turned off the alarm, and spun around to glare at Louis.
Knock, knock.
Have you gone crazy, Deathstalker? Have you finally lost it? So help me, if that fire had set off the sprinklers and soaked all my papers, I'd have gutted you with the nearest letter opener. Look what you've done to my office.
Guess whether I give a damn.
A dozen security men were charging toward Anne's office, all of them armed with swords and guns, though they hadn't drawn them yet. They saw Louis looking out at them and skidded to a halt before him. They took in the gap where the door had been, looked past Louis at the damaged office and at the fuming Anne, and then they took a good look at Louis, at his face and his eyes, and the gun still in his hand, though it wasn't pointing at anyone in particular just yet. Several of the security guards started to back away. Their leader stood his ground, though his mouth had gone very dry. There was danger on the air. They could all feel it, real and imminent. The security leader swallowed hard. He took his job very seriously, but no one was paying him enough to take on the Death Stalker.
Is everything all right here, Sir Champion?
Louis looked at him for a long moment, his eyes cold and terribly thoughtful.
Nice reaction time, but you're not needed here. You can go now. Isn't that right, Anne?
Anne moved forwards, keeping a cautious distance between herself and the man who had once been her closest friend. There was something about Louis, something in the calm, steady stance and the dark, dangerous eyes, and the gun he still hadn't put away or even lowered. She suddenly thought that he looked like a man who'd been pushed that little bit too far, who didn't care about anything anymore, because everything that mattered to him had already been taken away. And since this was Lewis' Deathstalker, that made him very dangerous indeed. She looked from him to the security people and back again, and Lewis smiled slowly. It didn't touch his eyes.
What are you going to do, Anne? Swear out a complaint against me? Tell the guards to arrest me? Perhaps you think I'll go quietly, but wouldn't put money on it.
I really wouldn't.
I'm going to talk to you one way or the other. Send these guards away, Anne, old friend, before I have to do something that I might or might not regret later.
One of the security guards caught the look in Lewis's eye.
Excuse me.
The other guards looked like they wanted to flee too. They were all seconds away from actions that could never be taken back or made up for later, and everyone there knew it. Lewis's smile widened. Anne stepped quickly forward to put herself between Lewis and the security guards.
It's all right. Everything's fine. It's all just a misunderstanding. There's nothing here for you to worry about. The Deathstalker and I will clear things up. You can return to your stations. Very good reaction time. I'll see you all get commendations. You can go now. Oh, and send someone to fix my door, would you? Thank you very much.
The security men looked at each other, shrugged pretty much in unison, and ostentatiously took their hands away from their weapons belts. They knew they weren't getting the whole story, and probably never would, but they all had enough experience and common sense to let it go. Some things you were better off not knowing, especially when it involved the real movers and shakers of the Empire. To his credit, the security leader hesitated, looking at Anne, but she shook her head firmly.
All right, men. False alarm.
It was going to be one of those days, he could tell. Though any day you ended up not having to go head-to-head with the Deathstalker, after all, was a good day by definition. Lewis watched them go, waiting till they'd all rounded the far corner, before finally holstering his disruptor. He was almost sure he wouldn't have used it. Almost. Anne relaxed a little and put down the heavy fire extinguisher. Lewis turned around and considered the buckled steel door lying on the floor. He picked it up, his muscles straining only a little, and leaned it against the door jamb so that it more or less filled the gap again. He looked around him, picked up his usual chair that had somehow got overturned in the excitement, set it down facing Anne, and sat on it.